The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
What's very sad about this Disney situation is they stepped into the woke swamp and they cannot get themselves out. This bill, which is not don't say gay, there's no phrase in the bill even with the word gay. You could have just as easily called it don't say straight. This is a bill about transparency and that you don't want state employees talking to six-year-olds about sex, which we all know that's the right thing. This is an imaginary controversy. But Bob Chapek, who's the CEO of Disney, he has a woke corporation. He has woke activists working for him. And Bill, I'm guessing you and Dana saw it. There was a video where he has all of his activist employees and he's pledging he'll be a better ally and he wishes he could be better and he'll do more for them. And now you are a hostage. You are a CEO hostage to your activist employees.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, just a follow-up to that. Disney, there was an insider who says that the company's receiving an overwhelming number of negative phone calls. No kidding, right? Apparently, this Disney insider is saying that the company's tracking the negative feedback they're receiving from people upset with the company's response to Florida's new education law. You know, the law, if you're not familiar with this, it basically makes it illegal for public schools to instruct kids, you know, on gender identity or sexuality, you know, with kids who are in kindergarten to third grade. I think back to when you were in first grade, right? Second grade, third grade. Think about your kids at that age. You want to teach them about gender identity? What does that even mean, right? How do you explain that to a kid? Should a first grader? I'm learning how to spell cat and dog. Should I be taught about sexuality? Why? So after this passed, Disney promised to work to repeal it, and you know this Florida bill, right? They kept calling it the don't say gay bill. Don't say gay. It had nothing to do with gay. You know, the word parent was in it like 30 some times. You know, it never mentioned the word gay, but they promised to repeal it, and they're vowing to offer queer content for children's entertainment. And as a result of that, angry parents, it sparked all sorts of angry calls from outraged parents. And they were telling Disney, hey, enough is enough. And apparently they're tracking those calls. But I saw an article, a commentary by the head of EWTN a little bit earlier today, Mike Warsaw. He raised a really good question. It made me think. I'm going to present it to you. Dr. Teresa Farnan is going to be stopping by, and let's talk about this. You're more than welcome to get in. You know, Mike points out this in his article. He says, Walt Disney's recent woke political activism has ignited a firestorm from its core customers, parents whose children watch and love Disney. By taking sides against parental rights in the national controversy over Florida's new education law, the Walt Disney Company has angered parents, prompting them to question whether they should continue to allow Disney movies and TV shows in their home. So that's one point. You know the agenda, right? Do you cancel your Disney Plus? Do you get rid of the videos? Do you not buy those new ones? Do you not support Disney, whose ideological approach right now is, I think, very harmful to kids? Mike goes on, he says, Disney's latest manifestation of the new religion of wokeness provokes another question. As woke capitalism in support of progressive demands continues to exert its authority over the operations of more and more American businesses, is it still possible? Now, here's the question. Think about this and let's talk about this. Is it still possible for Catholics and other people of faith to follow their convictions in their corporate workplace? If you're working for Twitter, if you are working for Disney in particular, right? If you're working for a company that is exporting really a dark, disoriented, even you can go as far as saying evil ideology, should you still work there? As a person of faith, as a person of morality, even if you're crunching numbers in the back or you're cleaning floors, you know, or you're doing something else, do you want to contribute to the success of that organization? Do you want to do that? I think it's a great question. Maybe you're in a situation right now, too. I'd love to hear from you. Are you working for a company where you say, man, I just shouldn't even be here? I wouldn't work for Planned Parenthood, right? Would you? No, of course not. So as a Catholic, should you work for Disney? I'm joined today by Dr. Teresa Farnan. I want to get her into the conversation, get her take on this. We'll talk about how militant really this woke ideology has actually become. Dr. Farnan has been with us in the past, wonderful author, and she's a moral philosopher who specializes in virtue ethics and moral education and philosophy of the person and gender and sexuality issues. And so good to have her with us today. She actually co-authored the book, and we've talked about this in the past. It's called Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public Schools Before It's Too Late. And that is that's another conversation, kind of tangential to this. But, Doctor, it's good to have you here with me. Good afternoon.
Oh, hey, delighted to be here. Thank you, Drew.
I love your take on this. And you and I have spoke about the rise of wokeism in the past, and we see its infiltration into schools. But honestly, I remember how terrified I was just to go to first grade, let alone, I had a nun teaching me, I hope I spelled dog right. And these guys want to teach me now about gender ideology. You know, it's like, that's way over the head of a six-year-old, a five-year-old. It's crazy. Give me your take on what we're seeing. And we could talk both educational. We can talk especially the entertainment industry, who's really decided to champion this.
Yeah, well, they are related, actually, because what we're seeing not only in Disney but in other corporations is two generations of young people, but in particular the millennial generation that has been thoroughly immersed in wokeism, especially depending on which college they came through and which career paths. Certain majors we know are more infused with wokeism than other majors, but we're on this in a sense is like the not just the first generation, but the second generation or second cohort of workers to come through. And these are people who from the early days in their education have been taught to believe that if you don't share the same commitment to an LGBT identity as something that has to be protected and valued more than a religious belief, then you are a bad person. And we know this in their writings. They're very upfront about saying when it comes to rights, rights that have to do with sexual orientation, sexual preferences, sexual identity take priority over any kind of religious belief. So to these people who are working in the Disney Corporation, the activists who are working there, anyone who objects is a bad person, and it is their job to spread this. And what was brilliant about not only this piece, but the piece they linked to by Archbishop Gomez, is Archbishop Gomez did a phenomenal job of laying out that this is, in fact, a new religion. It has its own religious beliefs. It has its own, saints, sinners, heretics. You can be shunned if you don't practice the faith, and it's important to evangelize. And so these are the evangelizers, and their target audience is your kids. So it is related.
Yeah, no, it's such a wonderful point you brought up too. And I want to open the phones. I only have Dr. Farnan at maybe 10, 15 minutes today. I wish we had more. You can get in 888-914-9149. Feel free to sound off. I would share from that article right before where that link is. It says, at its core, woke capitalism rejects many of the Christian tenets that previously informed the decision-making of our nation's business leaders, which fostered in them an impulse to treat their workers fairly and to serve something greater than the corporate bottom line. The Christian foundation now has been replaced with a harsh, unforgiving, secular creed that is the cause of social justice, zealously demanding that corporations must embrace radical agendas as sacred imperatives that no American can be allowed to impede, including their own employees. I guess, Doctor, how did we get to this particular point? I mean, it seems as if the pendulum, if you go back, a decade or several decades ago, has radically swung in the opposite direction. And I can't imagine this continuing. We see how defund police, that whole movement has, just on the surface, is so ridiculous. And when it plays out, you see how detrimental it is. I think the same thing is going to happen here with this, both in our schools and especially in the workplace. How far further can that pendulum swing?
Wow, a lot of good questions there. How did this happen? Well, from the early 2000s on, some of these activist groups like Human Rights Campaign have been issuing scorecards, and keeping track of the companies that are deemed LGBT friendly. And what started out as initially just seeing, do you offer insurance benefits to the partner of somebody who is in a same-sex relationship, has now morphed into, do you actively and aggressively support by giving money to certain LGBT causes? So over the last 20 years, these activist groups have been putting pressure on these corporations by threatening to expose them as racist, hateful, homophobic, you name it. And at the same time, they're also dealing with, again, the internal activists that they're hiring. So it's been sort of a long, steady march. I do think, however, I'm actually very hopeful, because I think we've reached a tipping point, and I think some of the trans ideology has been important in terms of opening people's eyes. Not that the battle is over, but that there are more people, you know, you want to talk about being woke. There are more people now who are awake to the danger that this poses to our children. And those are the parents. Those are parents who are people who ordinarily would consider themselves, you know, maybe they have someone they know who's in a same-sex relationship. They think they're very tolerant, but they don't like people messing with their kids. And so I think these activists may have awoken a sleeping giant. But let's not make any mistake about it. This is going to be a long, hard fight, and everybody needs to stand up and be counted. And the one thing we can't do is we can't hide and wait for someone else to take the lead. If you think something is wrong, there is a charitable way to express it. You can pick up the phone. You can call Disney. You can say, I'm really troubled by the stance. Parents have the right to be in charge of their education of their children, and why are you messing with that? And don't even get dragged into the way they want to frame it. But it's really important. We are at a tipping point, and that's why they're so spun up, and the rhetoric is so outrageous, and there's so much vitriol directed against Ron DeSantis. I actually think the bill doesn't go far enough. I think it should be not just K-3, but all kids.
I agree with that. Isn't it ridiculous, though? I mean, I think it was, I don't know, one of the awards, I forget what it was, Academy Awards, one of those things. I mean, the hosts were up there saying, oh, we're not allowed to say gay. And they kept saying, gay. I mean, I love the way that those on the radical left, they have co-opted language. And honestly, they do it brilliantly. The word gay is not even in this bill. And that's what it has been branded and dubbed. And I say this all the time. I mean, you take a look at abortion, right? The murder of a child in the womb. It's rebranded as something very noble, reproductive justice, right? Reproductive freedom. Right. I mean, you take a look at these whitewashed tombs of words that they use. I mean, they broadly change the definition of things. And it's brilliant in some respects. And yet, you know, it's continuing to go on. I think this is also a battle of language as well. I think we need to co-opt the language or call them out when they're misusing it. And in this case, that's the case. But again, that's hard to do, because you know what? You say something enough times, people begin to believe it. And we just see them repeating these phrases over and over again. And the media has me more concerned than even the schools. Schools, yes, kids are very malleable, but parents can get involved. And we've seen that at school boards and what's happening there. When a company like Disney is putting this stuff up in this beautifully packaged, you know, well-produced type of package, this poison pill that kids swallow, I don't know how you fight against that other than stop buying their products. But I'll throw that to you. I'll let you respond.
Oh no, I agree. We're very judicious users of Disney, if I can put it that way, because obviously we have young kids. I have a little one with Down syndrome, and kids with Down syndrome love Disney. But we have to be very careful. And the Disney Channel is off limits, because even back in 2017, Disney had a cartoon episode with a same-sex kiss. So they've been pushing this. They've had it in their series, The Proud Family. This has already been laced into their programming. So they really should not be considered safe programming for children. But they're not the only one. Nickelodeon with Blue's Clues, with the drag queen and the Pride Parade. Yeah. They've all been part of this. And so parents have to exercise a tremendous amount of vigilance. And the distinction with this, you know, with public education, you can, hopefully, if you have the ability, you may be able to move your child if it gets bad. with the media, it's ever present. It's everywhere. It's in every home, and people trust a name like Disney. And that's, you know, maybe this bill will make people realize, hey, I can't really trust Disney because they have an agenda, and it's not necessarily my agenda. But who are you anyway with an agenda to try to push an agenda onto my child?
Yeah, no kidding. So, let's take a few calls. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. We'll go to Santa Cruz, California. And Jorge wants to join the conversation. He's got a comment for you, doctor. Hi, Jorge.
Sure.
Hi, Drew. Good afternoon, and thanks for taking my call. Before I start my comment, I just want to say that my 11-year-old son, on his own, when he saw the yearbook arrived to my house, he started reading it and he finished it. And he is so grateful for what you showed him. And he actually wants to send you an email. So I'll send you an email.
Please do that. And for those who don't know, that's a book I did last year on divine mercy. And it's a great time to read that. So thank you, Jorge. But no, we'd love to hear your comment.
Everyone's reading over here.
Oh, thank you.
Here's something that I'd like to suggest that, you know, just like you were saying just now, like this is exactly what I want to tell him. Disney does a great job at packaging the messaging. The Hollywood does the same thing. They have this orchestrated message that it gets all the way to the schools. And I think, now I'm not going to say this from the standpoint of just Catholics, but we, and I speak as a single father of two that are going to public schools here in Santa Cruz area, the most secular place on earth. Daily, I am battling messaging from the teachers, all this acceptance of all these radical things. I think if doctors or you experts can help us, and I run into a lot of Latino parents, I'm originally from Mexico, and we don't know what to say sometimes to our kids, to have a well-packaged talking point to say, here's what's going on, here's what you need to do, here's where you need to stay focused. And if the diocese and all this infrastructure could help us, because just like the mothers are involved in school, I am a single parent, and I am actually using line waiting for my son to be picked up. And so I think we need some help, because we are battling against these well-orchestrated marketing campaigns that get all the way to to the schools and everything else. So whatever you guys can do, it would be really helpful. I'm telling you this, I'm reporting from the front lines. That is what is needed, I think. Talking points from our church or local dioceses or churches where we can just say, here's what you need to say, here's how you need to, you know, confront whatever happens in school. So that's my comment. Thank you for all that you
great
did,
idea.
Drew, and everyone else at the radio.
God bless you, Jorge. That was
awesome.
An amazing phone call, and wow. But if I could just put in a plug for the website that I helped to found, personandidentity.com, we have a Spanish website or a Spanish version of the website where you can access resources that can help you to bring arguments, you know, be able to respond to the messaging that's coming home from your school. We've got everything. We have a lot of materials translated in Spanish. We work with a woman who's a native Spanish speaker, who's also an attorney, who's just brilliant, and she's really helped us with a lot of that stuff. So personandidentity.com is the website, and certainly on the issue of gender identity, that would be the place where you can start for Spanish resources.
Yeah, before we go back to the phones, indulge me in this question. You know, one of the things Mike Warsaw pointed out in his piece, and the piece was dubbed, you know, Catholics Need Not Apply. As a moral theologian, should followers of Christ, should we work for institutions, be them, Disney, or might be, you know, who knows, it could be Twitter, whoever, you know, you can look at them. And if they are of Planned Parenthood, if they're exporting, you know, really something that is anti-Christian in their product, that's harmful to, you know, kids, to the nation at large. Do we have a moral obligation to leave our job? Should we stay in that job? If we're aware of what's happening here, what should people of faith actually do? I mean, the guy says, hey, I'm crunching numbers. I'm not exporting this stuff. You know, I'm the accountant in the back, or, hey, I clean the floors here. What is our moral obligation when it comes to a company, especially like Disney? Disney and Planned Parenthood are two great examples of two companies I would never want to work for based on their particular ideology and what they're doing to harm others.
Yeah, sure. That's always the great question. And so the way we would answer it is we would say, how remote is your cooperation with the evil that is occurring? And number one, and number two, there is a value, which I suspect for most people, unless you're the person who's actually designing and producing and marketing or in charge of legislative strategies at Disney, if you're the person who's walking around in the Cinderella costume at right. Disney World, your cooperation is so remote as to be really non-existent.
Right.
But on the other hand, if you're actively promoting and pushing this, then you've got a problem, and then you really need to say to yourself, this is something that I can't be involved in. The flip side of that, though, is that, you know, it's really important as our culture descends into secularism, not to give up the public square. And so there are a lot of people working at companies, even like BlackRock, or if you're a financial planner, you may be doing investments where the investments three steps down are going to some kind of advocacy group, and maybe it's not a great investment, but that's how you're supporting your family, right? And so you may not be able to go and work for the Catholic investment firm, or you may be someone who's working for a company that has investments tied up in one of these big major JP Morgan type funding, mutual funds, and you don't have any control of that. It's important for us as Catholics not to give up that public square. So to the extent that you can continue to work, to support your family, to be a witness to the truth, and to be that important example, that's really important. And the flip side of it is, how dark is our public square going to be if we as Catholics all withdraw? So I would never say to someone, you need to quit. But I will say, if you feel like at some point you are going to be asked to do something that could compromise your faith, you better start thinking about your exit plan, because at some point you may have to stand up for your principles, and you might be asked to do something. And if you say no, you'll lose your job. And so always have that backup plan in mind.
And to your point, I think it's really important. If you're crunching the numbers, it's one thing, or you're sweeping the floors, or you're serving the lunch there at Disney, you're in the costume. If I'm the guy that's writing the script, or I am the editor on that program, or I'm involved in the promotion of it, I think there's a different culpability depending on what you're doing to take that that dysfunction and help get it out, help it to reach other people. So that's something I guess you have to evaluate and really look at. Thank God for moral theology, doctor, and a lot of things we can talk about. We should actually get into it. Let me go back to a few more calls. We only have a few minutes. Tiffany is raising another point here. She's in Fall River, Massachusetts. Tiffany, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew.
Hi, Tiffany.
Thank you for taking my call. Hi, how are you, dear? God bless you guys. I love this show.
Thanks.
But I just wanted to touch on about how, I've been an avid fan for Disney for years, and I recently seen for a few years now, maybe about 5 years, that they have been slowly starting to, like we said before, they've been coming evil almost. And it's, I wanted to touch on, if you want to hit them where, where you want to take money away from them, also look into their other companies that Disney is affiliated with, like Fox and ABC News. I think ABC is part of Fox, but look at their balance sheets, their income statements. You can see all of that online. That's all public.
Yeah.
So
it's a good point, Tiffany. I think Disney and ABC are connected. I don't think Fox is connected with Disney or with ABC, but it's a good point. And Doctor, let's talk about that. I mean, it's not just the parent company. So often it's many of these subsidiaries.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And Disney is making a ton of money on merchandising. It's making money on the cruise industry, all kinds of things. So, yeah, absolutely. And you have to be ready to see what we can do to bring economic pressure. But I will say, and this isn't to discourage people, but just to say, again, keep in mind, this is a religion for people. Michael Medved, years ago, I think the year that the movie, maybe it was the year Basic Instinct came out, I don't know, I might have the wrong movie, but he pointed out that in that year, the highest grossing movies were all G-rated movies.
Wow.
But most of the movies Hollywood makes, like 97 or 98%, I'm going off memory, were all R-rated.
Wow.
So they're not even responding to to demand. This is, wow, they're producing it because this is what they want to produce. This is artistically important to them. So we do have to keep in mind, and it may take a lot of economic pressure, and people need to be consistent. You can't just boycott Disney for 3 weeks and then go, yeah, back to it.
Right.
We need to be building alternatives, right? Let's if there's an alternative that's a healthy alternative, support it.
And that's the thing. I mean, that's really an important point. I'm so glad you brought that up because, you know, a lot of people boycotted Netflix, or, you know, you take a look at Home Depot or Lowe's or these different companies, you see where some of the money goes. I mean, you'd have to boycott everything by the time you're done looking at what these companies end up supporting. So what's the solution? I really think it's alternatives. We need great radio. We need great television. We need great movie, you know, companies. We need to have a Catholic or a solidly Christian presence out there with a good moral foundation. We want to make a difference in the culture. Tiffany is bringing up, or David is bringing up a question pertaining to that as well. He's listening in North Carolina. David, good afternoon.
Hi, David. Good afternoon. Hello. And my question was, which Drew had already just answered, was what are some alternatives for children's entertainment, as well as far as contributing to companies that there is moral evils? Yeah. How do you avoid contributing to those companies?
That's great. So let's two things there. And Doctor, maybe you can answer both of those. One, what are some of the alternatives? That's a great question. I think the Daily Wire has announced that they're going to be coming out making kids content because they're frustrated with what Disney's doing. So that's an alternative. I don't know what else is out there. No, there's lots of other companies as well. But to David's point, what are those alternatives, and what are your alternatives in terms of not contributing to, let's say it's Home Depot or somebody that supports Planned Parenthood?
Yeah, I actually think your best. Well, so first of all, it would be amazing if Daily Wire were able to do that. The alternative so far has been some very small groups, whether it was the, if you remember the CCP movies, the St. Nicholas, things like that, which were little cartoons for kids. Hanna-Barbera used to have a Christian programming set of cartoons. But the Christian communities have been much better about pulling together and doing children's programming. EWTN has children's programming in the morning, so you might have to get your DVR going. As far as whether it's shopping at big corporations or investing in different corporations, go local. Meet people from your church. Find out what the local businesses are. Honestly, we need that anyway. You know, your local hardware store owner, maybe he's not going to be as cheap as Home Depot, but he's probably a lot more knowledgeable. And at the end of the day, the more, you know, and I don't mean to pick on Home Depot, but I think right, with nice. All of these things, we have to get back to these local communities. But I also want to say, and I know we're running out of time, we have to be confident as Christians. We've got to be, we are on the winning side. God will provide. You know, this is a pretty mild battle compared to the martyrdom of the early Amen. Christians. So we should be confident, happy, joyful, you know, be unafraid to proclaim our faith and to, you know, say to people, hey, I'm a Christian. I don't do this because I think it's against human dignity. And you might start a conversation, and maybe you won't. Maybe they'll be offended, but that's their problem, not yours.
Yeah, Doctor, and again, just to wrap this conversation up, because I think you brought it up great. Let's not abandon the public square. Let's change it, right? Let's change it. Let's transform it. And
Amen.
It begins with us. Your website is doing that. I know you give people some real great insight. What's the best way to connect and where they can find more info on this?
Yeah, it's at personandidentity, all one word, .com. And we have all kinds of resources on gender identity. Another, if you're interested in some of the wider cultural issues, you can go to the Catholic Women's Forum website, which is linked to on the Ethics and Public Policy Center website. And I know Theology of Home with Carrie Gress and Noelle Mehring. Noelle has done a lot on anti-wokeness, and so she's another tremendous resource. So there are people out there. The more you start linking into it, the more you're going to find, the more you'll go down, you know, you'll feel supported in your convictions and maybe have the courage to not be afraid. We just have to not be afraid.
Amen. Keep up your good work. We'll talk again soon, okay? I'm very grateful
Amen.
For
Thank
all
you,
that you're
Drew.
Doing.
Thank you
so much. It's Dr. Teresa Farnan, and check out her website, personandidentity.com, personandidentity.com. Her book, too, is a must-read. Get out now why you should pull your child from public school before it's too late. I know that sounds kind of harsh. I always kind of chuckle at that title, but I'll tell you what, there's a lot of truth to it. Doctor, thanks. Keep up your good work, okay?
Thank you, Drew. Bye-bye.
We'll talk soon. When I return, we'll change gears. We'll do something a little bit lighter, but this is another thing that made me think. Scientists want to send our location, where we are located in space, out into the cosmos. There are some people who have real concerns. I'll tell you why.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio, getting you connected.
Yeah, so good to be here with you today. Thanks for joining me. You know, I saw a story last week. The headline grabbed my attention. It said, was it an interstellar traveler, right? Apparently, a dishwasher-sized meteor dashed over the shores of Papua New Guinea before sunrise. This is back in 2014, and it burned up in the fiery friction of the Earth's atmosphere. But there were a couple Harvard researchers. They made the case. They speculate. I don't know whether I'll be able to prove this or not, that it wasn't just any space rock, right? They believe that this originated from another star system, not our own. And they really believe it might have been the first observed meteor of interstellar origin. So they wrote up this extraordinary claim. They submitted it to the Astronomy Journal, and the paper was not accepted for publication. But it raises questions. You know, I mean, lots of them. And you know how fascinated I am by space. Interest in UFOs continues to grow, both among scientists and amongst a number of government officials. And I saw a story where right now scientists are planning to beam details about Earth, about you, where you live, about the human civilization. They want to beam it out into space to a region of our galaxy that they believe, they speculate, hypothesize, might contain potentially habitable exoplanets. So you might think, hey, that's great, right? Because there's a lot of benefits to it. Let's assume that there is a more advanced civilization out there, right? Let's say there's a friendly alien race. Wouldn't it be great to have that friendship? You know, we beam the information about who we are, you know, where we're located in the solar system, you know, and perhaps, you know, they locate us, and the next thing you know, we are advancing. They're advancing the human civilization. We have advanced technology that comes our way. Clearly, you know, when you see the video of the USS Nimitz, when you see so much of this UFO footage that's out there, it's been released recently. There is a percentage of it that the U.S. government says we cannot explain. They just can't explain it. Well, if it's Russia or China, they better explain it, or we're incredibly vulnerable. What if it's otherworldly? Huh? That raises all sorts of concerns. I mean, to me right now, if that's the case, it's been going on for quite a while. Maybe these are just observers. Maybe they're intelligent and non-hostile. But what if there was a hostile intelligence out there, some sort of extraterrestrial intelligence that might want to say, we can really mine this planet? Or who knows? They can experiment on the human race. We don't know. So it raises this idea of beaming our location into space raises some questions. Sending the message could benefit humanity, and no doubt about it. I kind of like that idea. But there are others, a lot of them. In fact, 99% of astronomers think it's a bad idea. They don't think it's a good idea that's out there, along with SpaceX chief executive Elon Musk, you know, and a lot of other scientists. They condemn the idea of sending these messages into space. Stephen Hawking, right? We all know who he is. He was a critic of the celestial outreach, if you will. He did an interview back in 2010. You know, he's a very renowned physicist, and he warned that advanced aliens, they might be looking to conquer and colonize whatever planet they reached. So let's talk about this for a moment. I've invited back to the program Dr. Diana Pulsuka. She is a professor of religion at the University of North Carolina, specializes in Catholic history. And we've spoke to her in the past about intelligent life. If it's out there, what would that mean? How do we reconcile with that? We've talked about everything from unidentified, you know, aerial phenomena with her to Joseph Cupertino, the great saint who could actually levitate and some would say fly. She was actually also, believe it or not, a little side note here, she was a consultant on the movie The Conjuring, kind of a scary movie, right? She joins me today. Doctor, it's good to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Drew. It's great to be here.
Always good to have you here. When I saw these stories about meteors streaking interstellar, you know, from an interstellar, you know, from another galaxy, if you will, another solar system, when I see these scientists talk about wanting to, you know, send our location out into space, and there's so many other things. We've got the James Webb Space Telescope that's going to be going up and giving us even better imagery. I'd love your thoughts on all of this. Let's start with this concept of beaming our location into areas that might have habitable life. What are your thoughts on it?
Sure. That's a great question. And it's definitely been in the news for the last year. I've been doing podcasts and interviews. I've had to say no to most of them. I've just been so busy talking about this because it is at the forefront of, you know, since the government has identified that we do have aerial phenomena in the sky, and they're not saying, oh, it's not there. They're actually acknowledging it's there. It's definitely been in the conversation. This wouldn't be the first time we've done this, actually. So, you know, SETI, which is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, it's been around since the 1970s. They actually did send something up into, let's see, where was it? I don't think it was our solar system, but it was outside, or it may have been. They sent messages out in 1974, and then NASA actually in 1977 sent a golden record with various information, including communications from whales and greetings from, I think, at least 50 different human languages. Yep. So it wouldn't be the first time that we've broadcast, you know, Earth out into space and tried to find out if there were signals coming back. But what's happening now is that, you know, we have better technology now. And so scientists have, about 11 different scientists have come together, and they've updated that message that was sent in 1974, and they've identified a place in our galaxy where there could be, you know, what they think could be extraterrestrial intelligence. And they want to do this. They haven't done it yet because they do know that it's controversial.
Yeah, you know, it's not only controversial, but it's you know, it can be concerning. I mean, I like the idea of these, you know, these extraterrestrials being intelligent and friendly. And I guess the case for that would be, and I know you're closer to this issue than I am. There have been a lot of sightings, a lot of unexplained, you know, aerial phenomena, if you will. And a lot of it can be explained away, but there are some, thanks to technology today, thanks to some of the type of like the USS Nimitz, you know, chasing that Tic Tac that could move at blazing speeds, and other video that's now being captured thanks to cell phones and the ability to capture the stuff that the government cannot explain away. And this has been going on for a long time. I would think if these were hostile or they were enemies, we might have already seen, you know, something unfold. Maybe they are intelligent, and with intelligence comes a more peaceful civilization. I don't know. What are your thoughts on the possibility of intelligent extraterrestrial life? And, you know, again, this gets into some issues such as souls and rationality and things along those lines. I mean, for somebody to be fallen, have a fallen nature, you could see, you know, you could see them being hostile, but your take on where they might be, you know, if there is other life out there, the need for souls, for evangelization, and the type of, I don't know, personality, if you will, that these extraterrestrials may have. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, would they be hostile? Or
oh,
would they be
absolutely.
Friendly?
Oh, of course. Yes. Yeah. No, that's the question. So you do have people, like you said, Elon Musk has said, you know, well, this is a really bad idea. Stephen Hawking has said the same thing. You know, why would we do such a thing? Message our coordinates, because in the history of our own, you know, if we look at ourselves, a lot of people would point to human nature and say, well, you know, we're at war now. You know, well, who's to say that if we're messaging, you know, intelligent life out there, that they wouldn't look back at us and say, hey, you know, they're, you know, we have better technology than them. Let's go see what kind of resources they have right on that planet. But there's this other idea, and it's this idea that scientists have been talking about. It's this, that if there is a civilization, and they use us as an example, that can get past the point of not, and this sounds pretty pessimistic, of not killing themselves, then by default, they must be non-hostile.
Right.
So that's an idea that they have. And that's the reason that they use to justify what's now called METI, which is messaging mm-hmm. potential extraterrestrial intelligence. What I think is really interesting is that this latest article that's out in a major media source about possibly doing this, it, you know, the scientists that have revamped this 1974 message, they're basically saying, well, we're opening this up for discussion. We're not actually going to do it yet. And mm-hmm. there's no laws against doing it, although you right. and I can say, hey, wait a minute, we live here on Earth too. You know, shouldn't we have a democracy? Shouldn't we have, you know, a unanimous vote about this? Because, you know, if they're going to come, they're going to come to see us right. as well as you. That's so right. Shouldn't we have a consensus? So, you know, so who knows? I mean, frankly, if there are scientists and they're thinking about this, frankly, Drew, most mm-hmm. likely they've probably already done it, is what I'm thinking. Not yeah. this group. I'm not identifying this group, but I do know scientists, and I know how they, yeah. you know, yeah. and they're well, probably doing it already. So
I'll tell you what, Doctor, hold the thought. When we come back, I'll take some calls. Mary Alice, you're on deck. I'll get you on the air, and if you want to join us. Final 10 minutes of the Drew Mariani Show today, taking a look at the possibility of intelligent life and scientists wanting to send to our location and information about who we are and what we're all about. Feel free to sound off. Feel free to ask your questions. Feel free to join the conversation. The number, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots from the west. The whole thing, dude.
Get the facts. Get the faith. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was audio from some pilots off the USS Nimitz. Became very widespread, and it raised a lot of questions about extraterrestrial life. The director of National Intelligence released some highly anticipated UFO material. I forget how long ago this was. Was it last year? Maybe it was in 2021. It was 9 pages long. They chronicled about 145 different incidences, all of them involving the Navy, and that they were given to investigate. And only one of them could be identified. You know, that was a weather balloon that crashed, but the other 144 incidences could not be identified at all. And what it says is that those, you know, the incidences don't involve U.S., you know, military-funded programs, nor do they involve, let's say, advancements in Russia or Chinese technology, you know, that our military intelligence programs, you know, would have been aware of that. But what they do involve is real objects. You know, these weren't just instruments going haywire. These objects were tracked across multiple systems, radar, infrared, electro-optical, you know, weapon seekers, visual observation. There was all sorts of things that have manifested. So, it raises questions about UAPs. What does it mean? You know, are these, is there another explanation? Or could it be possible that these objects that exhibit unusual flight characteristics are from an extraterrestrial intelligence? I'm joined today by Dr. Diana Pulsuka. She wrote a book, and you might want to check it out. It's a good read, and you'll be glad you picked it up, called American Cosmic UFOs, Religion, and Technology. She's also a member of the Society of Catholic Scientists, and she's here today to take your your calls and questions. I find that fascinating, Doctor, that's for sure. And that evidence continues to mount. Let's jump into the phones, because I know we have a few minutes with you today. Mary Alice is waiting. She's in Columbus, Ohio, and has got a question for you. Hi, Mary Alice.
Good afternoon, Cale, and Doctor, good afternoon. I don't have a college degree. I only have 1 year of college up in at Cleveland State University, but I would like to think that I'm a fairly reasonable and rational person. What language would we be using to try and communicate with these extraterrestrials? And I'm thinking this is rather far-fetched, and if there were ever anything that I might agree with Mr. Dawkins or Professor Dawkins on this, this might be it. But I don't think this is something that we should pursue. It's sort of kind of like going to Mars. If somebody wants to go to Mars, fine. I understand it's pretty cold out there, and it's going to take quite a while to get there. But how are we going to communicate with these extraterrestrials? Are we going to use English or German or binary zeros and ones?
Mary, it's a good question. Dr. Brasuco explain what's happening here. Go right ahead, Doc.
Yeah, that's the question. That's the best question right there. So what language do we use to communicate, you know, assuming that they're going to understand what we're saying? We can't use any of the languages that were used in 1974. So, you know, we beamed a bunch of languages up there, including the languages of whales and things like that. So they updated it to binary code. So we're using right now binary code. We're using astral pulses. You know, we're using a lot of different things, technological types of language that are universal. Well, universal in the sense that everyone on Earth knows them, but would ETI know them? When I say ETI, I'm saying extraterrestrial intelligence. We just don't know. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that we're just, as we go, we you know, make mistakes and we just keep going. So it's not going to be the type of language that I'm using right now or that we're using to communicate.
And it's, you know, I just think, let's turn the hands of time back 250 years, right?
Right,
imagine
exactly.
If something from a distant galaxy hit our planet, right? And it was on some desk and we had no way of playing, reading, getting that information off of. And if it was, you know, if it was binary code, we would have no clue what that was, right?
Exactly. So, nothing.
Timing is everything, right? We might send something out there and it might hit a civilization that hasn't developed, or, you know, maybe they have. You don't know. What's your thought on intelligent life? Do you think that there are other not habitable planets? Do you think there are other intelligent life forms that are out there?
Is this for me or the caller?
That's for you.
Oh, okay. Well, in our own religious tradition, we do have, you know, intelligent life that's non-human, of course, in the form of being angels and, you know, things that God has created. Right. So I recommend a book by Brother Guy Consolmagno, who's a friend of mine, and someone who I don't know, Paul Mueller. I think you may have had him on your show. And the book is called Would You Baptize an Extraterrestrial? And they get into this question of, you know, if and when we do something like this does happen, you know, what does this mean in terms of God's creation of all the things that are seen and unseen, visible and not visible? And I think that there's room in the universe for these kinds of things. Absolutely.
Let me go to Sue in Santa Maria. An interesting perspective on what these might be. Sue, good afternoon.
Hi there. I do believe in UFOs, but I believe they're different than what a lot of people believe, that they come from another. I believe that UFOs are demonic. I believe that since we are all created in God's image, that anything UFO, a lizard person, or whatever they say, is actually the great deceiver, and it is from the devil. Because he is the great deceiver. I don't think we're going to really ever going to get off this planet because our eyes and body can't take it off of this planet. You know, we're not going to survive the radiation, you know, that we're being protected by this great planet that God has created.
you know. So that's my comment.
Nancy, first of all, I love the approach. I got a friend. He's an author. His name's Michael Brown. Sue, forgive me. He made that case before. He asked, are UFOs a manifestation of evil? 8 million Americans have had bizarre experiences with entities purportedly coming from outer space. Some of these claim abductions. Some claim to be harassed. And it brings to mind, as Dr. Pulsuk was pointing out, could they be other beings, perhaps fallen angels? Doctor, your thoughts on that? I mean, we don't know, but it's an interesting theory that Sue brought forward.
Yeah, so part of what is great about my field and discipline is that I'm a professor of religious studies, so, you know, I'm not doing Catholic theology, I'm doing Catholic history, and I'm a trained academic in doing that. And what we do is we don't actually, unless we know for absolute certainty, we just don't reach conclusions. So my mind is frankly open. When I talk to people who've had experiences like these, like abductions and things like that, I personally would not want that in my life.
Me either. I agree. Well, doctor, look, I got to leave it right there. First of all, thank you for your work and thank you for being here and for your perspective. Your book, American Cosmic, UFOs, Religion and Technology. People want to get it. What's the best way to connect?
Actually, it's on Amazon. And thank you so much, Drew. I love being on your show. It's great.
All right. Well, thank you. That's Dr. Diana Walsh-Pulsuka, professor in the Philosophy and Religion Department at the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. Good to have her with us. I'm out of time for the day. I'll be back tomorrow to give you another look at life you won't find anywhere else. Until then, may God bless you.